This is, or let me first introduce myself for those of you who have not had the dubious pleasure of hearing me before. This is Dave Emery. This is For the Record program number 1121. More than one flew, quote, F-L-U, unquote, over the cuckoo's nest, part two. This is being recorded live on Friday the 13th, an appropriate time of 2020. The reference to flu is to influenza, and in, For the Record, 1117, we took a look at the various of what are known as gain-of-function studies, in which existing viruses were genetically mutated to make them more dangerous, including experiments on an avian flu that had made it basically an upper respiratory infection communicable by ferrets. And the COVID-19 is communicable by upper respiratory activity, unlike some of the previous viruses of that kind, notably the SARS virus as well. This program must be evaluated against the background of previous programs. In particular, the terrifying information in For the Record programs 1119 and 1120. That description is up on the SpitfireList.com website, and I can't encourage listeners strongly enough to use the website. This is kind of a hybrid form of broadcasting. I take information that, by and large, is in print and attempt to bring it to the electronic media. It is, of course, imperfect, but there is a tacit and emphatic invitation to listeners to the show to go ahead and use that information and to communicate it via the internet or what have you. To make it go viral would be the ideal situation under the circumstances. We should keep in mind, in particular, some of the DARPA-funded projects that are being proposed in connection with the vaccines for the COVID-19. Some of those involve novel processes in which genetic material is introduced into people's cells, sometimes producing permanent changes. I wonder to what extent some of that might be used for a vaccine that would be mandated for military personnel and would then make them immune to future biological warfare. The theory would be that it would be defensive. I wonder if there are elements within our own military planning to do exactly that. Certainly there are disturbing indications of that possibility. Again, that possibility in the remarkable article by Whitney Webb from The Last American Vagabond. Again, please use SpitfireList.com for that. Now, we are going to be taking a look at some of the proposed drugs that are being tested and perhaps will be brought to market. A bit of good news is something that we will begin with, rather unusual in this program, and then we will take a look at Gilead Pharmaceuticals and their drug Remdesivir, which was hailed in a Washington Post article as the only promising treatment for COVID-19. There has been remarkably little discussion of a Thai doctors' discovery of a drug, a relatively mundane drug cocktail involving oseltamivir or Tamiflu, and a couple of common antivirals used to treat HIV. That certainly appeared to be a very effective treatment, bringing a 71-year-old Chinese woman who was very seriously ill back to good health, and then 48 hours later she tested negative for the virus. So that could be a cure, and yet we have heard almost nothing about that, and that has even been flagged as a suspicious or fake news by some of the internet pundits in this country. That may have something to do with the labeling of that as a cure when the link was sent around by people, which is an understandable element of confusion. Cure, quote-unquote, and, quote, treatment, unquote, could be easily conflated in layperson's minds. Indeed, I think the authorities in connection with this are guilty, and we will take a look at this, are guilty of spreading panic about this disease. More about that later. However, some good news with some interesting footnotes to it. There does appear to be, at least on its surface, a drug that was previously approved for treatment of cancer that appears to be very successful in treating COVID-19. Information about that from Channel 13 WHAM News in Rochester, New York, from March 11th of 2020. This is by Jane Flash, capital F-L-A-S-C-H. The article is titled, ROC, that would be Rochester Biotech Company, says lab tests a former cancer drug confirm it stops COVID-19. Very good information. I would take note of where this testing was done. A vaccine for COVID-19 is likely years away, yet a drug tested in a lab 3 weeks ago has been found to stop the virus from spreading cell to cell. The stunning announcement comes from a Rochester biotech company called Oxyagen, that's Oyagen, excuse me, capital O-Y-A, capital G-E-N, Incorporated. The company is seeking to fast-track the formula to treat people who become infected. Quote, our treatment right now is the priority, said Dr. Harold Smith of Oyagen. He added the drug already had FDA approval for another use. The tests were conducted at the federal government's Integrated Research Facility in Fort Detrick, Maryland, parenthetically, the Army's Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases, or AMRID, had been closed down by the CDC. That, by the way, is at Fort Detrick, had been closed down by the CDC for multiple safety violations in August, early August of last year. Continuing, and repeating the last sentence, the tests of this drug were conducted at the federal government's Integrated Research Facility in Fort Detrick, Maryland. A drug called Oya-1 had already been proven in lab tests there to be effective against Ebola. If it worked for Ebola, is it absolutely unique for Ebola, or would it work on other viruses, unquote, asked Dr. Smith, though he said an actual drug for human consumption was never pursued. The coronavirus was still new and contained to Wuhan, China, when a sample of the live virus was shipped to the government lab for testing with Oya-1. Test samples viewed under a microscope show a clear, quote, before, unquote, and, quote, after, unquote, that indicates properties that allowed the virus to grow and spread were neutralized. Quote, the drug was so effective that even though we got through our dose testing, we had literally sterilized the culture of the virus, so we knew this was a powerful thing, unquote, said Dr. Smith. Under a different name, Oya 1 was first developed in the 1960s as a treatment for cancer. It was later shelved as ineffective, but not before it received approval from the FDA. Safe dosage levels were determined for men, women, and children. Clinical trials have already been done on this compound, and if safety is a main issue, we feel safety has been addressed years ago, unquote, said Dr. Smith. He said, preliminary research indicates a single dose of the medicine stops the progression of COVID-19 for 8 days and continues to work at half strength for another 4 days. Skipping down, you've got this compound that's absolutely lethal to the virus, and we know it has a margin of safety in people, said Dr. Smith. What are we waiting for? Well, indeed, I do note that the testing of that drug was done at Fort Detrick because in connection with COVID-19, the military and DARPA have been heavily involved in research around that as we looked at great length and great detail and frankly a very scary article, bat-borne viruses, coronaviruses, have been a major focal point of Pentagon research, and there are some very disturbing indications that what has been labeled as preventive measure or preventive measures to ensure against a future epidemic are actually, quote, defensive, unquote, biological warfare research acting undercover. And as I have said several times, including in our last couple of broadcasts, the difference between offensive and defensive biological warfare research is academic. If you are investigating how we beasties, whether they are virus or bacteria, are infecting humans, animals, or plants and producing pathology, the difference between offensive and defensive is completely academic. I think that much of the research that we have seen into preventing pandemics may very well be a cover for just such a thing. Now, this is, of course, very good news. Again, note that it was Fort Detrick that where that research was conducted. That's important. But if, in fact, Oya 1 is as effective as this doctor maintains, then that is very, very good news indeed. Spoiler alert, I can't take time due to the limitations of time in this program to give you my full reaction to what's going on, but I think I could sum it up saying, you know, Dave Emery to Earth, get an effing grip, okay? This is absolute hysteria, and I think my characterization of the COVID-19 outbreak, in addition to firm indications that this may very well be part of the destabilization of China that I have spoken about at great length. This is a bio psyop. People are absolutely beside themselves and frankly being terrified, in my opinion, by the authorities who have dramatically inflated the threat and have behaved in an absolutely irresponsible fashion about this. There are things to be done and things to be avoided, but people are absolutely doing handsprings over this, and that is not surprising considering what the authorities are doing. Now, this particular company, Oyagen, has come up with a drug, Oya 1, previously approved by FDA for application to cancer treatment. That proved ineffective, but it appears through tests at Fort Detrick to be remarkably important, remarkably successful for treating COVID-19. If, by the way, there is appropriate treatment, particularly if it comes from the military, including perhaps a vaccine, And if this causes the economy to recover, just watch Donald Trump and his enablers in the political and media and national security establishments to hold him aloft as some sort of a demigod. If Donald Trump is perceived as the savior of the COVID-19 crisis, his reelection is assured, and it would not be surprising to me if, let's say, I think there is a really good chance he will be reelected, and it will not surprise me if the Republicans carry the Senate and perhaps even regain control of the House of Representatives, in which case you are going to eat your thing on a roll with hot sauce, baby. It is, well, I think it's already over. I thought it was over when Trump got elected in 2016, but let's just say you are not going to believe what you are going to see. We're going to go back to a high-tech version of the Middle Ages. But now, Oyogen and their Oya 1 drug appear to be very effective treatments for COVID-19, and yet it is something of a long-shot drug called remdesivir, previously invented to treat Ebola, but not effective, and administered intravenously, that is the drug of choice, shall we say, for the investment industry and also for the medical establishment as well. We have spoken about Gilead Sciences, as we shall see, the Renaissance Technologies, which was developed by its CEO and driving force were Robert Mercer. Mercer stepped down as CEO at the end of 2017 after the Cambridge Analytica scandal broke. It appears, though, the usual procedure is for them to retain a major portion of investment in that fund. As far as I can tell, that is the case with Mercer, but I've not had time to vet indeed it may not be completely public, all of the investments in, all the investors in Renaissance Technologies. But from Insider Monkey blog of December 29th of 2019 by Asma Ul Husna, H-U-S-N-A, in hedge funds, 2019 review, most favored hedge fund stocks versus Gilead Sciences Incorporated. Skipping down, after talking about what a great year 2019 was, it has been a fantastic year for equity investors as Donald Trump pressured Federal Reserve to reduce interest rates and finalized the first leg of a trade deal with China, and talks about how great things were. In this article, we are going to take a look at how hedge funds feel about a stock like Gilead Sciences Incorporated and compare its performance against hedge funds' favorite stocks. Skipping down, this again at the end of last year. The largest stake in Gilead Sciences Incorporated was held by Renaissance Technologies, again up till the end of 2017. Robert Mercer of Cambridge Analytica, Steve Bannon and Breitbart Associate, was Bannon Associate and Breitbart Investor, was the CEO of Renaissance Technologies, in all probability is still a major investor and making money from that. But again, the largest stake in Gilead Sciences Incorporated was held by Renaissance Technologies, which reported holding $933.9 million worth of stock at the end of September. And reviewing information about Gilead Sciences, one of the things I found interesting about that was the board of directors. One of the original directors was Benno C. Schmidt Sr., who was one of the driving forces behind Richard Nixon's war on cancer. Parts of that were used as an apparent cover for quote, research into redevelopment of AIDS in all probability. And we looked at that in a number of shows for the record, or AFA 16 for the record 686, and again in for the record 11 2015. The National Cancer Institute's Special Viral Cancer Research Institute appears to have been basically a biological warfare front. It involves the Litton Bionetics, formerly Bionetics Research Systems Incorporated, a wholly owned subsidiary of defense contractor Litton Industries. That organization ran the Special Viral Cancer Research or the Special Viral Cancer Research Program for the National Cancer Institute at Fort Beatrix. And many of the key people in that were veterans of the biological warfare programs in the U.S. and the Naval Biosciences Research Laboratory right here in the Bay Area was heavily involved with that program as well. Again, done a lot of work on AIDS. Can't talk about that due to time now. There are many links in the written description for the record 1115. Now, in addition to Benno C. Schmidt, another key member of the board of directors was none other than Donald Rumsfeld. In fact, he was chairman of the board of directors of Gilead Sciences for years prior to going to work as defense secretary for George W. Bush in 2001. Gilead remains sort of the firm of choice. It is a major focal point of hedge fund investment, including Renaissance Technologies, formerly headed by and probably still invested in to a large extent by Robert Mercer. The Washington Post of March 11th of 2020, the best hope for coronavirus treatment is an experimental drug that fizzled against Ebola. This by Christopher Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D, skipping down. Invented by Gilead about a decade ago, remdesivir, that's R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R, had been proven to stop certain viruses from replicating in lab experiments and in animals. It has been researched in academic labs in North Carolina and Tennessee, with backing from federal taxpayers since 2014 as part of a $37.5 million effort by the National Institutes of Health to find treatments for infectious diseases. Until Monday, when it fell in a brutal market rout, Gilead's stock price had defied the overall market decline of recent weeks, rising almost 20% from February 21st to March 6th on hopes that the drug could provide the first treatment for COVID-19. The lack of treatment helps explain why. The stock price increased 5% on February 24th alone when a top official of the World Health Organization pinned much of the world's hopes for a treatment on the drug. Quote, "There is only one drug right now that we think may have a real efficacy, and that's remdesivir," unquote, said Bruce Aylward, capital A-Y-L-W-A-R-D, the World Health Organization's Assistant Director General. 10 days later, RBC Capital Markets gave it only a 50% chance of succeeding as a treatment. The mixed signals had done little to dampen interest. There have been desperate pleas for supplies to treat patients and a, quote, compassionate use, unquote, basis. And the entire article will be in the written description for the record 1121. Now, with the market going up and down and up and down, keep in mind short selling and insider trading. I don't know anything about Mr. Aylward, but if word gets out that, yeah, well, this drug is going to be great, then people can short sell the stock if they know it's going to go, if the market's going to go down. We have spoken at length in the past about J. Kyle Bass, associate of Steve Bannon, also associate of, and in the past, and perhaps still, co-investor with Tommy Hicks Jr., co-chairman of the National RNC, and deeply involved with the interagency governmental networks that are coordinating the anti-China effort. The epicenter of the anti-China effort is Steve Bannon, who has numerous fascist influences. Perhaps the most important is fascist philosopher Julius Evola, who found Mussolini to be a little bit too namby-pamby, I guess you could say, and gravitated away from Il Duce. By the end of World War II, Evola's research was being underwritten by the Nazi SS, and he is a dominant influence on Steve Bannon. When Steve Bannon says something about China has one system and we have the other, and he said, one is going to survive and the other isn't, unquote. That basically is a declaration of total war, and it is to be taken at face value, bearing in mind who Steve Bannon is and with whom he is and has been associated. Robert Mercer, J. Kyle Bass, et al. Another interesting development, very little publicity about this. This from the Defense One blog of March 12th of 2020. This by Patrick Tucker, P-U-C-K-E-R, Defense One's technology editor. We've got the vaccine, says Pentagon-funded company. Reads in part, a Canadian company says that it has produced a COVID-19 vaccine just 20 days after receiving the coronavirus's genetic sequence, using a unique technology that they soon hope to submit for FDA approval. One more time. A Canadian company says that it has produced a COVID-19 vaccine just 20 days after receiving the coronavirus's genetic sequence, using a unique technology that they soon hope to submit for FDA approval. Medicago, that's M-E-D-I-C-A-G-O, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Medicago CEO Bruce Clark said his company could produce as many as 10 million doses a month if regulatory hurdles can be cleared. He said in a Thursday interview, the vaccine could start to become available in November of 2021. Skipping down. And by the way, we looked at DARPA-associated firms getting approved for developing vaccines against COVID-19 in our last two shows. Skipping down. In 2010, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, put together a $100 million program dubbed Blue Angel to look into new forms of vaccine discovery and production. A big chunk of that money went to Medicago to build a facility in North Carolina, where they showed that they could find a vaccine in just 20 days, then rapidly scale up production. One of the points that was made in the consummately important Whitney Webb article from the last American Vagabond blog that we accessed in, for the records, 1119 and 1120. And by the way, that is highlighted and printed or reprinted in a Food for Thought post on the left-hand side of the the SpitfireList.com website. Is that not only has DARPA been heavily involved in the vaccines, but that some of the vaccines, if they are approved, will be using technology that has not been tried on human beings before, and that some have suggested may not be as benign, or as it has been represented as being. This is not to say I am a, quote, anti-vaxxer, unquote. Generally, I am pro-vaccine, but as with anything else, vaccines have to be properly made and have to be properly vetted, and when you have contamination of, say, the old polio vaccine with cancer-causing monkey viruses or inappropriately vetted procedures involving novel genetic manipulation, the documented history of and potential for mischief is enormous. So please note the DARPA involvement of and funding of this Medicago, M-E-D-I-C-A-G-O company that now has a COVID-19 vaccine. I would also note, in connection with not only Oyogen, with Remdesivir, with Medicago, and other companies, do not fail to note also the possibilities of manipulation of the stock market, insider trading, short selling, you name it. Do not fail to note that the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, is a former lobbyist for Big Pharma. And I will leave it to you to mull over that delightful little appetizer before we serve you some more of the main course. Oh, what the heck. As an old short order cook, let's go right to the main course. One of the things that I find very suspicious about what is that? Well, there are a lot of things. That landmark Whitney Webb article goes into an awful lot. People have been predicting, well, gee whiz, there will be a disease X. There have been experiments in which existing pathogenic viruses have been subjected to genetic modification in what are known as GOF, or gain-of-function trials or experiments. That makes them more pathogenic. And in the deregulatory environment of Trump's administration, the possibility of some accidental dissemination of something like this is enormous. Do note that the CDC closed down Fort Detrick at the beginning of August of last year. It has now been partially at least restarted, and they may come out looking like heroes if in fact they can ride to the rescue on a white horse and provide the answer via either a treatment drug or a cure and or a vaccine for the COVID-19. If, in fact, that can happen and if the economy recovers, you will see Donald Trump's chin stuck out like the Rock of Gibraltar, and he will be returned for a second term, very possibly retaining Republican control of the Senate if he has long coattails, and this current crisis, really collective insanity, in my opinion, will be the vehicle, be Donald Trump's 911. So many of these gain-of-function experiments, I think, are frankly suspicious. Many professionals in the medical and biotechnology fields have also been critical. Looking at some of these things, to me, it's like taking a large-caliber handgun, shooting somebody in the head, and saying, yep, this proves that gunshot wounds to the head can be fatal. What we need to do now is to prepare hospitals for triage, for treatment of serious gunshot wounds to the head, and also develop a bulletproof helmet for everyone to wear. Some of these things can become self-justifying prophecies. Do note that in October 2019, a disease X exercise in New York City that was conducted under the auspices of not only the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but Johns Hopkins University and the World Economic Forum. It talked about a disease X, and there has been discussion of that for quite some time. Bloomberg News, February 22nd of 2020, by Jason Gale. Coronavirus may be disease X, unquote, health experts warned about. picture is emerging of an unpredictable enigmatic pathogen. This was not quite a month ago. The World Health Organization cautioned years ago that a mysterious disease X, unquote, could spark an international contagion. The new coronavirus illness, with its ability to quickly morph from mild to deadly, is emerging as a contender. From recent reports about the stealthy ways the so-called COVID-19 virus spreads and manes, a picture is emerging of an enigmatic pathogen whose effects are mainly mild, but which occasionally and unpredictably turns deadly in the second week. Skipping down. Speaking of the Chinese ophthalmologist Li Wenliang, who first warned of the virus, he was a relatively healthy, as far as I can tell, 34-year-old man. Then he got desperately sick and died. Skipping down. The doctor, who was in good health prior to his infection, appeared to have a relatively mild case until his lungs became inflamed, leading to the man's death 2 days later, said Linfa Wang, who heads the Emerging Infectious Disease Program at Duke National University of Singapore Medical School. Note the following. A similar pattern of inflammation noted among COVID-19 patients was observed in those who succumbed to the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, said Gregory A. Poland, the Mary Lowell Leary Emeritus Professor of Medicine, Infectious Diseases, and Molecular Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Whenever you have an infection, you have a battle going on, unquote, Poland said in an interview Thursday. And that battle is between the damage that the virus is doing and the damage the body can do when it tries to fight it off. There was information in a book that came out in 1943 called The Three Wars Against Germany. We accessed information from the Germany, the now defunct but still up online Germany Watch blog. There was speculation based on some of the cables intercepted by a German secret agent in World War One that the 1918 flu may have been an early biological warfare weapon that got out of control, wound up killing a lot of people in Germany as well. Whether or not speculation in that regard is substantive, I don't think there is conclusive proof, but I certainly think that it is something that warrants further investigation, as we will see. As we looked at, I should say, in For the Record 11:17, in 1997, military scientists were able to successfully recover some of the genetic material from the 1918 flu pandemic. That virus was recreated in 2005. There have been apparently several, at least two, maybe as many as five, haplotypes or strains, mutations of the COVID-19. Some have been identified. There was an allegation by a Taiwanese-based scientist that there were five different haplotypes and that the only place where all five were present was in the U.S. Most of his presentation was from a Global Times publication of a Chinese study with which some have taken issue. There do appear to be at least two strains of COVID-19. I am wondering whether one of those is relatively mild and the other produces something, an overstimulation of the nervous, of the immune system, and leads to death of relatively young and healthy people like Dr. Wenliang. I also wonder whether perhaps he was based in Wuhan and there are links between U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases and institutions in Wuhan. I wonder, and this again is speculative, I wonder if perhaps he was targeted for the more severe type of that virus, and he has then become a martyr to people who are critics of China, and also to many sincere Chinese as well. Again, I wonder if that is part of the bio-psyop in China. Certainly, we are having a bio-psyop here in the U.S. Considering that there are roughly 130,000 people diagnosed worldwide with the disease and maybe 5,000 or 6,000 deaths, this against, by the way, 45 million Americans infected with the flu 2 years ago in the 2017-2018 flu season, the most severe that the U.S. has had in 40 years. 80,000 Americans died, and there was more than half as many Americans died in 2017 and the flu season of 2017-2018 as have been diagnosed worldwide with the COVID-19 virus. And the entire world has come to a halt. Equities markets are tumbling. Events all over the world are being canceled. Classes for schools are being canceled. Everything is breaking down. Interestingly enough, by the way, I would note before I continue, we've seen almost nothing about COVID-19 in the military, if in fact it is present. The military is our largest institution, and perhaps it's most ubiquitous. One would think that, for example, in barracks or mess halls, thinking about ships at sea, the all-important submarine service, if in fact COVID-19 was present in those environments, it would spread very rapidly. Of course, men and women in the service are young and in excellent physical condition, also will have access to quality medical care. And people who are young and healthy and strong are not at great risk at all for serious disease in connection with this. But I'm staggered at the lack, the almost total lack of discussion of COVID-19 in the military, if in fact it is present at all. If it isn't, one should wonder why. Also, given the fact that the military is present and active all over the world, again, I wonder how come no discussion of that. I can think of many possible explanations, but I'm simply throwing that out there. We have not heard about that. No more NBA, spring training and baseball has been canceled, all sorts of things are going down. But nothing about that, if in fact there is any COVID-19 in the military. If not, I think that too raises some interesting questions. However, note the following, and I think, frankly, that the authorities are guilty in considerable measure of, in effect, terrorism. Again, I think the COVID-19 could be thought of as a bio-psyop, and the sort of over-the-top Chicken Little journalism and, frankly, propagandizing was exemplified by the New York Times, which is in full Warren Report mode over this. February 27th of 2020, an op-ed column by Peter Daszak, D-A-S-Z-A-K. We knew disease X was coming. It's here now. Disease X, as we said back then, would likely result from a virus originating in animals and would emerge somewhere on the planet where economic development draws people and wildlife together. Disease X would probably be confused with other diseases early in the outbreak and would spread quickly and silently, exploiting networks of human travel and trade. It would reach multiple countries and force containment. Disease X would have a mortality rate higher than a seasonal flu, but would spread as easily as the flu. It would shake financial markets even before it achieved pandemic status. In a nutshell, COVID-19 is disease X. I would note in 2018, there was also a great deal when this conference of the WHO took place. There was also a great deal of research into these very kinds of viruses. To me, this looks like, you know, the guy who is waving waving blue and red pennants back and forth very rapidly. And the guy comes along and says, what are you doing with waving those blue and red pennants back and forth? And the guy says, I'm keeping rhinoceroses away. And the guy says, there are no rhinoceroses around here. He says, you see, it works. obviously. I'm exaggerating slightly. But the treatment of this as, you know, the end of the goddamn world, I think is incredibly irresponsible. However, noting the panic in the stock markets, if you knew this was going to happen, you could make a whole lot of money short selling equities. You could make a whole lot of money investing in Remdesivir, whose chairman of the board was Donald Rumsfeld for years running up to 2001. And you do a whole lot of things, but I find this absolutely irresponsible and something of a self-justifying prophecy. Talking about gain-of-function experiments, GOF, from the scientists of November 16th of 2015, lab-made coronavirus triggers debate by Jeff Oxt, last name capital AKST. Ralph Barich, B-A-R-I-C, an infectious disease researcher at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill last week, November 9th, published a study on his team's efforts to engineer a virus with the surface protein of the SHCO14 coronavirus found in horseshoe bats in China and the backbone of one that causes human-like severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, in mice. The hybrid virus could infect human airway cells and cause disease in mice, according to the team's results, which were published in Nature Medicine. The results demonstrate the ability of the SHCO14 surface protein to bind and infect human cells, validating concerns that this virus or other coronaviruses found in bat species may be capable of making the leap to people without first evolving in an intermediate host, Nature reported. They also reignite a debate about whether that information justifies the risk of such work, known as gain-of-function research. Quote, if the new virus escaped, nobody could predict the trajectory, Simon Wayne Hobson, a virologist at the Pasteur Institute in Paris, told Nature. Again, taking a virus of that kind and weaponizing it, basically making it capable of infecting human lung tissue and mice as well, is at best irresponsible. One can but wonder to what extent, even if his motives were innocent, as they may have been, you make money from doing projects like this, and then someone, a malefactor, can come in, take that, and spread it around. I would note the following. The recreation of the COVID-19 virus from scratch, using basically gene editing and almost mail order biotechnology. That very same Ralph Barich, B-A-R-I-C, from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, is the guy who basically got the contract. Note the following too, the MIT Technology Review of February 15th of 2020. Biologists rush to recreate the China coronavirus from its DNA code. This is by Antonio Regalado, R-E-G-A-L-A-V-O. The world is what, now this again was back in mid-February, the world is watching with alarm as China struggles to contain a dangerous new virus now being called SARS-CoV-2. It has since been termed COVID-19. It has quarantined entire cities, and the U.S. has put a blanket ban on travelers who have been there. Health officials are scrambling to understand how the virus is transmitted and how to treat patients. But in one University of North Carolina lab, there is a different race. Researchers are trying to create a copy of the virus from scratch. Led by Ralph Barich, an expert in coronaviruses, which get their name from the crown-shaped spike they use to enter human cells, the North Carolina team expects to recreate the virus starting only from computer readouts of its genetic sequence posted online by Chinese labs last month. for remarkable ability to, quote, boot up, unquote, viruses from genetic instructions is made possible by companies that manufacture custom DNA molecules, such as Integrated DNA Technology, Twist, that's T-W-I-S-T, Bioscience, and Atum, or Atum, A-T-U-M. By ordering the right genes, which cost a few $1,000s, and then stitching them together to create a copy of the coronavirus genome, it is possible to inject the genetic material into cells and jumpstart the virus to life. Forgive me for asking if perhaps that was exactly how this thing got made in the first place. Again, with things like Mr. Barish's gain of function, upgrading, so to speak, of the coronavirus, a synthetic coronavirus, bat coronavirus, a precursor to MERS and SARS, was synthesized in the U.S. in 2008. With gain of function studies having been put on hold in 2014, then resumed in 2017, with gain of function studies adapting avian flu to ferrets, making them communicable across species and communicable via respiratory activity, since they are upper respiratory infections. I don't think it is at all out of line to ask this question. And again, that consummately important article by Whitney Webb in The Last American Vagabond that we took a look at in our last two shows was very large indeed. Skipping down about this technology, the technology immediately created bioweapon worries. What if terrorists used the technique to resurrect smallpox? That hasn't happened, but it does mean that the scourges like polio, smallpox, and now the Chinese coronavirus cannot now ever be truly wiped out. Note the following. Researchers at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, drove that point home in 2005 when they resurrected the influenza virus that killed tens of millions of people in 1918-1919. That was the virus that we looked at back in 1997. We reprised this article in For the Record number 1117. Maybe it was 1116, but it's in the descriptions. That was the virus that was part of the genetic material of which was recovered by Pentagon scientists in 1997. And that virus was recreated from scratch in 2005. Again, indicating what is possible to do with this. There is obviously a lot more work that needs to be done, but given the history of not only this country incorporating the war criminals involved with medical experimentation in the Third Reich, but their counterparts in Japan, and by the way, there was collaboration between the Nazi and Imperial Japanese biological warfare and chemical research programs, their incorporation into the U.S.'s BW research programs, and the setting of the template, so to speak, for those subsequent developments, something that we have looked at in many shows. For the Record program 480, For the Record 585, 682, 686, 644, 912, and 1012, just a few of those off the top of my head, as well as AFA 16. We took a look at some of the research about AIDS in For the Record 1115. In our next program, we are going to access a bit of that history. We're going to take a look at the assassination of JFK and an aspect of that that does not get a lot of examination, namely the makeup of the Texas Court of Inquiry, the Texas body in charge with investigating JFK's assassination. An individual linked to the CIA, Leon Jaworski, who had shown, quote, judicial restraint, unquote, in trying people who had murdered a German POW in American POW camps that were allowed by their American overseers to be run basically by dedicated Nazi officers. Very conveniently, the Americans who had made that decision were not held to account by Leon Jaworski. Then when he presided over the Dachau, the trials of doctors who had been involved in war crimes and medical experiments at Dachau, he again used judicial restraint. Five of those doctors have already signed contracts with the U.S. before they went on trial at Nuremberg. However, more of that in programs to come. I cannot stress strongly enough that people should use the written descriptions for these programs. I've done a lot of shows about COVID-19 and the epidemic, and obviously this is a pedantic form of broadcasting, so please do use the written descriptions and other people to the information contained therein. This concludes For the Record program number 1121. More than one, quote, flew FLU, unquote, over the cuckoo's nest, part two. This is being recorded on March 13th of 2020. Happy Friday the 13th. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.